Greetings, sisters and brothers. My name is Brother Dex, and I'd like to welcome you all to another installment of DLH Audio and Video Production. Today's date is September the 9th, the year 2006. Today, brothers and sisters, I'm going to be discussing a topic and reading an article that's affecting us all, particularly our young people, black folks or black youth of African descent, male and female. What am I talking about? I'm talking about the gang culture, or I should say the thug culture, that so many of our youth have embraced. Now, the book that I'm going to be reading from is called Race Cold War, The Power of Words, Images, and Symbols on the Black Psyche by Kahari Inaharo. And the chapter that I'm going to be going into, brothers and sisters, is called Gang Banging, Symbols of the Setup. The setup is a controlled game designed to trap and maintain black people in inferior and destructive behaviors. Now, the synopsis of this book is this, Race Cold War. How do we protect ourselves from a racist curriculum and media, and how can we hold them accountable? How does the media describe the black community, its men and women? What is the Afrocentric perspective on the Trent Lott debacle and the barbershop controversy? What has been the impact of a white image of Jesus and a European standard of beauty on the black psyche? How long and what will it take for us to value the beauty of a dark-skinned, thick-lipped, broad-nosed, short-haired female? Why did the white media honor Halle Berry and Denzel Washington for despicable characters? Do white people speak in code language when talking about black people? Brothers and sisters, we're not going to get into all of this, but basically, if we break down the media, some of the words that they use and some of the images that they put out there, most of the people embrace these images. And it's very sinister, because perception is everything. Because if we look at a lot of the rap and R&B videos that are coming out by the music corporations such as Sony, MCA, Time Warner and Universal, most of the images that they are showing of black people are basically trifling images. What do I mean, brothers and sisters, is they basically are showing black people in a criminal setting with a criminal mindset, disrespecting black women, putting more value into material objects than into our own communities. Without further ado, brothers and sisters, I'm going to be reading from this chapter, Gang Banging, Symbols of the Setup. The setup is a control game designed to trap and maintain black people in inferior and destructive behaviors. And from time to time, I'm going to be doing a little commentary on some of the items that I'm going to read. Now, the thing of it is, brothers and sisters, I always tell people is this, or anyone that listens to one of my programs or one of my analysis research projects, is don't take my word for any information that I present. Also do your own analysis and also do your own research. But most importantly, think outside the box. Never accept what is being presented to you as the fact and the end of story and nothing else to be said about it. Always ask questions. Black people do not have real gangs that control real territory. The so-called areas that these gangs call their territory are the neighborhoods where injustice, crime, drugs, and mayhem are allowed to exist. They dare not cross over the border and bring into the white suburban communities open-air drug markets, loud music, and drive-by shootings. They know that they would be crushed immediately. These so-called black gangs are desperate groups of black males engaging in ineffective responses to racism by playing dangerous games of life and death that are centered around self-destructive activities. They are involved in distributing quantities of destructive drugs in their own communities to their own people while shooting, maiming, and killing each other with guns they do not manufacture. They prey on helpless and defenseless people. They do not fight armed and well-organized people. They are engaged in insane activities that help to destroy the lives of their own people, many of whom are their mothers, sisters, and brothers. One thing I got to stop right here, brothers and sisters, is this. I live in Detroit, Michigan. And a lot of times, we have a lot of young brothers and sisters that drive nice cars. They're driving nice cars, or driving a hoopty or whatever, but can't afford decent insurance. So a lot of times, brothers and sisters will go out there, go across 8 Mile or whatever, without having everything straight, and then end up getting caught, and then going to jail. But then what ends up happening is, a lot of brothers and sisters say, well, I got to do what I got to do to survive. But the thing of it is, if you know that your license are not straight, and that you got tickets, and you don't have insurance on your automobile, or you don't have the right registration or whatever on your automobile, why deliver yourself to the criminal justice system? And that's the same thing I ask the brothers and sisters who are selling drugs. Now, the justification is, a lot of them will say is, well, I got to eat. But the thing of it is, a lot of brothers and sisters are not buying food that's going to nourish their bodies. A lot of them are engaging in buying material possessions, such as nice rims for the car, booming stereo systems, expensive clothes, expensive gym shoes, you name it. Now, this is not to say that all black people are doing this. It's just a certain group. And, by the way, this is not an indictment of all black folks. This is just an analysis of some of the inappropriate behaviors that we are engaging in as a people, and the reasons why we are not stepping to the plate. These gangs do not own and control multi-billion dollar banks to launder trillions of dollars. They do not control huge, organized fleets of planes, trucks, and ships to transfer drugs. In reality, these so-called gangbangers are little more than minor leaguers who try to live out hardcore gang fantasies that have been placed in their minds from childhood. They learned these images from watching hours of television, movies, and videos that showed white people engaging in drive-by shootings and killing people. They try to imitate this behavior without understanding the social and racial consequences. They have no clue as to the origins of these kinds of destructive images, words, thoughts, and symbols. In these movies, white people kill people without remorse or any sense of humanity. It is almost as if people killed as if the people killed were not human. In the worldview of the white supremacist, human life is highly expandable. Wanton disregard and insensitivity to human life are an integral part of the violence and power so pervasive in white supremacist culture. Derogatory images and disregard for human life are imitated at the crudest level by highly untrained, undisciplined, and undeveloped young black male minds. The black gangster emulate the worst behavioral aspects of white gangsters, yet they do not take on the best parts which are associated with community control and development. The black gangsters do not seem to understand that if the base of his community is destroyed, his base of power will evaporate. The first rule is to keep the home community strong, free of drugs and horrible devastation. The black gangbanger and the gangster lifestyle have been glorified in the white media. It is considered as an acceptable and fashionable lifestyle. And then too, brothers and sisters, we have so many younger brothers and sisters who have grown up and been indoctrinated into this lifestyle from the time that they have been born, that they think it's a normal way of life. They think that it's normal. You know, you have some brothers and sisters who think that it's normal for a young black person who hasn't even reached the age of 21 yet to be killed at the age of 18 or younger. And then too, you have a lot of young black folks who are thinking that it is normal for black folks to live in the ghetto. Now, if you study every other culture that has been, that has been not sociably acceptable, such as the Italians, the Jews, those as an example, what did they do? A lot of them assimilated into the mainstream culture, the Anglo-Saxon culture. We have the same thing that's going on with a lot of the Arabs and Chaldeans. Now, we look at it, and to be truthful, we can look at what's going on in black neighborhoods all across the country. Black folks are not controlling everything, anything. We have basically been made consumers to buy products. And then I must say, a lot of products that we are buying, we don't even need. And this is the question I always ask a lot of my people. Why is it that we can buy what we want, but we still begging for what we need? Now back to the question that was at hand about, we look at other ethnic groups coming into our communities, buying up property. A lot of them have opened up like hair care products, hair care stores. Who controls the market for the hair care, black hair care industry? It's not black folks anymore of African descent. It is now the Koreans. The Koreans, from what I understand, for the last 40 years have been tapping into and now control the black hair care industry. It's not uncommon to go through black communities across the United States of America, particularly in your urban areas or in your big cities, and see Koreans behind the counter selling black hair care products. Here in Detroit, we can look at how the Arabs and Chaldeans control the convenience stores and party stores and the gas stations. They have cornered that market and the supermarket. Then we can look at the Chinese, how they have opened up Chinese food restaurants all throughout the city of Detroit. Then we can look at, before that, of how the Jews were running some of these same institutions, some of these same establishments beforehand, prior to the 1940s, 1950s, before the so-called Great White Flight. Back to this. All the way, white entrepreneurs have made an economic windfall, reaping billions of dollars from the so-called gangster culture. They sell millions of copies of rap, CDs, low-cut jeans, gold chains, underwear, bandanas, shoes, eyeglasses, jewelry, and so forth. These so-called gangbangers are in reality nothing more than punks and cowards. Now that's the author, brothers and sisters. They are punks and cowards because they pick on and prey on defenseless black people. If these black youth were really gangsters, they would have real control over industries, shipping docks, towering skyscrapers, and control major business districts. And they would control hundreds of politicians. They are the characteristics of a real gang. If they were a real gang, they would go after power. They would take on the mafia, the international bankers, multinational businesses, corrupt politicians, and the massive intelligence superstructure. Now, I agree with that to a certain extent, brothers and sisters, but the thing of it is, the problem that we're having in our community is that we have black folks scared of the youth. Or either we have black folks, older folks, who have basically been given a lot of lip service to the youth and have basically sold them out. What do I mean by that? We have black folks who stand around and tell black youth, don't mess with drugs. Don't drink alcohol. Don't be having sex. Don't be doing this. Don't be doing that. You know, basically telling the youth not to do certain things, but are actually engaging in those activities. Now, images are stronger than words. Actions are speak louder than words. And that's what I'm trying to say. Images speak louder than words. Actions speak louder than words. And the thing of it is, brothers and sisters, the men have to quit punking out. That's the reason why we have so many young brothers out here in the hood who don't know how to be men. Because they have basically watched boys grow into be bigger boys who thought that they were men. And then, too, also, that's the reason why we have so much confusion in the black community. Because the men have not stepped up in their rightful place to be the protector and the breadwinner of the family. It amazes me, brothers and sisters, of how so many brothers or black men or black males will make excuses of the reason why they can't do certain things. Some of them use the excuse, well, I owe so much child support, so I don't want to get no job. Or I've been incarcerated, so I just don't give a damn anymore. Or this is the thing that's really hurting, is how we have older males who always want to downgrade anything that young black folks do and not encourage them. Now, the thing of it is, as I stated before, we have to not be scared of the youth. It amazes me, too, is how we have so many young, we have so many older folks who cross the street when they see a group of young black folks on the sidewalk or walking towards them. Also, we have this problem where older black folks don't want to admit that they have made mistakes. Now, me personally, me and a lot of older black folks, we owe the youth an apology because we have not set up any type of manufacturing facilities, that we have not set up any type of thing, you know, any type of things that make a community function. So what have the black youth did? They have looked outside the community and have emulated the enemy. These are the worst gangsters in history. The so-called black gangsters never used their ill-gotten weapons to raid white supremacist communities. Yet they would, without real thought or hesitation, destroy and leave trails of blood and devastation in their own communities. The mafia is a real gang. They control resources, politicians, whole sections of the federal military budget, and state government departments, and they own factories. Now, one of the things I got to talk about this, brothers and sisters, is this. Now, we look at the Italian gangsters. We look at the Jewish gangsters. That's right, the Jews had gangsters too, like Meyer Lansky and quite a few of them. I can't think of them all right off the bat. And we look at the Irish gangs. What did a lot of those folks do? A lot of those groups were involved in, and still to this day involved in, organized crime. But thing of it is, a lot of them invest their money into their community and send their children to school to become politicians, to become doctors, to become lawyers. Not to have two or three or four or five generations to keep, you know, stand in the family business of organized crime. A lot of them went legit. It's the same thing with boxing. A lot of those same groups back during the early part of the 20th century, a lot of them were in professional boxing. It was not uncommon to hear boxers with Jewish names or Italian names winning titles or awarded titles. But thing of it is, a lot of those folks, they basically used boxing for what it was worth as a stepping stone. They sent their children to school. Children got law degrees, became doctors, became lawyers, and came back to support their community and move out to build up other communities. But we look at what is happening to black folks. A lot of us, when we do get our degrees or when we do make it, we step away from the hood and we don't want to have nothing to do with the hood. And that's another big problem within itself. If the black gangsters were a real gang, they would build their communities with the so-called ill-gotten loot instead of helping to destroy it with the insane drug trade. They would have the power to keep drugs out of their mothers' communities. If they sold drugs, which they should not, it would only be in non-black communities. If they were really good imitators of real gangs, they would do exactly what the mafia did, economically enhance and build up their communities and homeland. The scene from the 1972 movie classic, The Godfather, underscores this when one of the mafia dons, speaking at an organized crime commission meeting designed to broker the peace, makes a startling comment regarding the drug trade. Now, The Godfather, brothers and sisters, was a novel written by Mario Puzo, if I'm not mistaken. And the book was basically dealing with the inner workings of organized crime. He says, speaking of drugs, and I quote, now this is actually in the movie, and if I'm not mistaken, I think it's in the book too. I don't want it in their schools, in our community. keep the drugs among the colors, the darkies. They are animals anyway, so let them lose their souls. End of quote. This is power. The black youth engaged in the gangster lifestyle are engaged in self-destructive activities and incredibly stupid behavior. Now, what do I mean? You know, now, brothers and sisters, if we go back and let's see. These so-called black gangs are desperate groups of black males engaging in ineffective responses to racism by playing dangerous games of life and death that are centered around self-destructive activities. They try to imitate this behavior without understanding the social and racial consequences. Now, we can look at what has happened with the racial consequences. The KKK is basically, and the white supremacist groups are basically sitting back and saying, let these niggas kill themselves, because they're going to kill one another off anyway. And then also with the social consequences is this. Black man or black woman ends up going to prison for selling drugs or killing another black male. That's knocking off two birds with one stone, brothers and sisters. Because the black male or black woman that has killed off another black person, that black person will not be able to contribute to the community in a positive fashion. Now, that same black person will end up going to prison, doing long time stretches, and they won't be able, you know, they might be able to, they'll be limited as far as what they can contribute to their immediate family, their children, and to the community. Now, don't get me wrong, you have had some brothers and sisters that have come out of the belly of the beast and have spoken about the dangers of being in gangs or being involved in the drug trade or even being on drugs or being involved in crime in any fashion. But thing of it is, brothers and sisters, if we go back, we can look at how the multimedia establishments have basically pumped millions and millions upon millions of dollars into imagery, music videos, CDs, and movies that cater to the self-destructive behaviors of the black race. Now, you have some entertainers who don't know themselves. They'll come out and say, well, we just keeping it real, and we showing what life is actually happening, you know, what's going on in the hood. But thing of it is, brothers and sisters, is this. How many times do we need for brothers and sisters to keep coming out or be, you know, keep bringing out movies that glamorize violence, glamorize the disrespect for the black woman? Now, some people might be saying, well, you know, we got to eat, and that's true enough. But the thing of it is, brothers and sisters, I go back to my old saying. Why is that we can buy what we want, but we still begging for what we need? The symbols of seduction. Youth are seduced into this gangster lifestyle through the symbols of wealth, power, sex, invincibility, virility, freedom, arrogance, and a lack of strong male guidance, stable families, unified and developed communities, moral foundations and principles, lack of power in the black community, and lack of an understanding of white supremacy. Black children are easy prey for white supremacist influence and direction. Now, we got to stop right there, brothers and sisters, because, we're going to keep going. The name of the setup and or operation is called gangster or gangbanger. The symbols of a setup include caches of jewelry, the bandana, headscarf, earrings, cell phones, droopy pants, caps turned backwards, rap music, the 40-ounce malt liquor, gold, silver, rings, gold chains, money, flashing cash, palatial homes, jet planes, shining cars, the gun, sometimes known as a Uzi or Glock 9, and the most powerful weapon of all, words. All of these items are produced for and targeted purposely toward black people. Now, we look at all this stuff, brothers and sisters, that the author talked about, the liquor, the gold, silver, the droopy pants, the caps turned backwards, etc. Now, those are all industries within themselves. What do I mean? Other ethnic groups are manufacturing and producing a lot of these things that we're buying. We buy what we want, but we begging for what we need. Now, another thing is, too, brothers and sisters, I'm going to tell you something that's really tripping me out. We got, some of these Chaldean Arab gas stations and some of these places that sell T-shirts are now selling shirts with cartoon characters and cartoon characters from commercials such as the Trix Rabbit and characters such as Pink Panther, Scooby-Doo, you name it, on T-shirts. Now, these T-shirts are being marketed towards the black youth and black people in general. Now, one day I was standing on the bus stop a couple of days ago, and this young man and his mother came up. The gentleman, he had to be about in his mid to late 20s, and his mother, she was in her early 40s to mid to late 40s. She was in her 40s, I'll put it like that. Now, the brother, he came up, and, I'm not one to prejudge people because we all have bad days. But this one brother, he came up with a black T-shirt on and some khaki pants and, some gym shoes. And his mother, she came up in some jeans and, a shirt and everything. Now, I looked at the brother's shirt, and the brother had on one of those shirts with one of the cartoon characters. It was the Pink Panther. Now, instead of the shirt saying Pink Panther, guess what the shirt said? The shirt said this. It said Pimp Panther. Now, the thing of it is, brothers and sisters, I'm looking at this brother, and I'm looking all around me. As a matter of fact, I was standing over there on 6 Mile and Coney. Now, if you know anything about 6 Mile and Coney, you know it's one of those areas that has really went down. Economically, that is, and it's running rampant with drugs and prostitution and everything. But I looked at this and I said to myself, man, what has the world come to? Now, I had noticed these shirts about at the beginning of the summer, right before school had let out in June here in Detroit, Michigan. And I noticed how some of the children go to a certain gas station over here on John R. and State Fair, and we're talking about they're going to get their hands on some of these shirts. Now, brothers, this is what I'm going to do is I'm going to play a clip from a newscast that talks about these shirts. So hold on tight, and I'm going to go straight to the clip. And I want you to think about some of the things that are being said on this clip. Okay, brothers and sisters, what I'm going to do is I'm going to set this clip up for you. This clip is about 5 minutes long, 5 to 6 minutes long, and it's from the Problem Solvers. And basically, it's a complaint from a sister who was talking about these shirts that I was explaining earlier with the cartoon characters and some of the grading messages on the shirts. Now, I want you to listen very carefully, brothers and sisters, of how a message can be put out there repetitiously, negative messages. And how the people, if they absorb these messages long enough, thanks to the repetition, that they would justify the reason, they would justify embracing these different self-destructive messages. So without further ado, we go to the problem solvers.
A message or a slogan on a T-shirt is really like a walking billboard, but some messages are popping up in the city and they're vulgar, even violent.
One Detroiter says those shirts are sending out a message that's bad for the city, and she wants stores to stop selling them. That's when problem solver Andre Eisen stepped in.
Violent crime is on the rise. The streets of Detroit are a much scarier place than they were a year ago today. Homicides are up almost 15%. More people are being shot and murdered in Motown. The city already has a reputation for being pretty rough, and scenes like this one are the reason why. A young man is gunned down, killed. His body lays dead in the street. A sad and violent scene. And some people are sporting paraphernalia that some say exploits it.
I was 100% offended. It perpetuates drugs, guns, and violence.
Shirts like these are being sold in party stores, clothing stores, gas stations, and T-shirt shops throughout the city. And the slogans are unbelievably crude. Look at the Jolly Green Giant. And these tricks are not for kids. The Pillsbury Doughboy isn't surrounded by pastries. It's more like a pile of money and guns. And then there's Bert and Ernie.
Well, my kids, who are 6 and 3, see Bert and Ernie. They think Sesame Street.
But here they look like street thugs with shiny guns.
And that's not a message we want to be sending to young people.
Well, you may not like what you see or what these shows say, but some people say that's tough because these teas are protected by the First Amendment.
Is it illegal? No. Is it in bad taste and very offensive? Absolutely.
City Council President Ken Cockrell is appalled by this apparel, and quite frankly, he believes selling it and wearing it is a step in the wrong direction.
Well, it just sends a really bad message. We're in a city where we're trying to turn things around. We're trying to redevelop the city economically, create jobs, reduce the number of violent crimes. So to see something like this, which actually seems to promote that, is very negative.
Cartoon characters being portrayed as criminals is bad. But look at this. This is how it's done on 7 Mile, and here's how they represent on Joy Road. Well, at least that's what the shirt says.
This was what goes on Joy Road, so therefore I'm just putting it out there.
If somebody looks at the shirt and they're like, wow, there's a gun there, there's bullet holes, what would you say to that?
Well, that's what we do in our hood.
That's not how we do it in Detroit.
This mom is beyond mad, and she wants shirts like these to disappear from every single store in Detroit. And she means it.
If you don't respect the citizens of Detroit enough to take the shirts down, then why should we spend our money there?
If you go into a store that is selling this type of stuff, I would urge you to talk to the manager, talk to the owner, tell them to stop selling it. Or maybe even engage in more direct action, such as actually picketing some of these places. That would really send a message.
Well, for some, the message has already been heard loud and clear. Many stores have already stopped selling them. But Marvin Lovejoy from the International T-Shirt Shop on 7 Mile has a message of his own.
If it wasn't popular demand, I wouldn't be in business today.
And you don't think it's perpetuating a stereotype or
no.
Perpetuating violence at all?
Not at all. It's just bad. It's a trend.
You hate to say it, but obviously part of the reason why some of these places are selling this stuff is because there's a certain group of folks out here who like it and who do buy it.
And now all we can hope is that what they wear isn't their way of life. In Detroit, Andrea Isom, Fox 2 News.
Well, brothers and sisters, that was a problem solver report that came on sometime last week at the end of August or the beginning of September. And it was dealing with how a lot of these shirts are being sold in the inner city here in Detroit, Michigan, to black youth. Now, as I stated before I went to that segment, I remember going to a certain gas station, picking up my Michigan Citizen newspaper, and some of the youth were talking about that that's a slick shirt. And a lot of the shirts had cartoon characters on them engaged in criminal activity with large amounts of cash, naked women, drugs, you name it. And the thing of it is, brothers and sisters, the question I always ask is this, that I'm asking right now is this. Why can't the energy be spent to sell uplifting paraphernalia such as shirts with Malcolm X or Dr. Martin Luther King or Marcus Messiah Garvey or the Honorable Elijah Muhammad or Bobby Seale or Huey Newton or the Black Panther Party of Self-Defense or even Muhammad Ali, because he did stand up against the military draft back in the 60s of being drafted to go to Vietnam. It's just a few things, brothers and sisters, that I truly want you to think about. Now, we go back to our article, The Symbols of Seduction. These powerful and highly addictive symbols lead to a fast, short, and deadly life. The most powerful symbol is gold. It symbolizes royalty and power. It is a magic potion. The religious traditions of black people, especially in the Western world, are inundated with notions of the streets of heaven being paved with gold. The association between God and gold is powerful stuff. Gold is an everlasting substance that guarantees eternal life and has God-like powers. The gold says that I am king of the earth and must be treated with respect. The gold has social transformation powers. Black males fight over gold chains. If asked about the mental association, they will say that it is not true. They will probably respond that they just wear gold because it looks good. A lot of material resources look good, but gold above all is the superior substance with the supreme and magic powers that means kingliness and royalty. It unlocks the door to the secret temple that leads from boyhood to manhood. It is part of the rites of passage. This has a deep unconscious meaning. The gold chain becomes a substitute for the real gold of Fort Knox. Now, one of the things, brothers and sisters, I got to stop here and think about is this, talk about is this. Now, I remember back in the day, growing up, my mama used to have one gold tooth. Now, it was a fad when she was growing up for young women down south, and possibly up north here too, to have a gold tooth. But something strange is happened. We now have brothers and sisters running around here, even when I was coming up, that was getting gold caps, or, you know, getting gold fronts, you know, putting them in front of their teeth to show that they, had a little pull, had a little money. But nowadays, brothers and sisters, we got brothers and sisters running around here talking about platinum with diamonds, talking about the grills, G-R-I-L-L-Z, grills. And the thing of it is, brothers and sisters, some of these brothers and sisters that are high profile in the music industry are spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on jewelry, millions of dollars on jewelry. Like, I was watching one segment of, I haven't got the show, but this one brother had, if I'm not mistaken, like $10,000 worth of jewelry in his mouth. And then around his neck and around his wrist, he had like another $250,000 worth of jewelry. And the thing of it is, too, brothers and sisters, if we look at shows like Lifestyles of How to Be a R&B Star or a Rap Star or Crib, basically, it is, you know, when other people look at that, other nationalities and ethnicities, the first thing that comes to their mind is they saying stuff like, you know, or making comments like, well, those guys got all the money, so black people must not be in bad shape. You know, that's just one of the things that some of the things that I hear. But like I tell them, just because one black person got a couple of $1 million or whatever, don't mean that the rest of the race is not suffering. Now, you know, we keep going back to this book because we're getting a little deeper, brothers and sisters, into the symbology. In white supremacist lore, black men are more concerned with looking good, which when Dakota means still trying to prove to white people that they are somebody, then quietly amassing collective economic power. Black people flash gold to show white people that they are not slaves, beggars, and socially incapacitated. Gold rings also symbolize eternity. These symbols implant the ideal within the deep recesses of the mind of the young gangster that he is unbreakable and immortal. The flashing of cash symbolizes that one has an abundance of wealth and resources. But I gotta go back, brother and sister. When I made a mistake, my subconscious told me to say immoral, because we do have brothers and sisters out there, or young black men and black women, that are engaging in immoral behavior and immoral acts in order to get these riches. And a lot of them will justify saying that, well, I'm making the money. But as my brother Kush, the Black Unifier and the Conscious Rasta, Kitty over at Wadu, once said, some of our people are using material things to fill that hole that's in their soul. And a lot of these brothers and sisters are engaging in the world of pornographic movies or the porno industry, the X-rated movie industry. And then we look at some of the videos, the rap videos or the hip-hop and R&B videos that are coming out. Now, they got two types of videos. They got the ones that they show during the day, and then they got the other, you know, the uncut version, where they showing sex acts and things that are going on. Now, sex, if you look at it in a procreative, you know, if it's used for procreation, it's a beautiful thing, particularly like if you with the one that you love. But, well, that's another topic within itself, brothers and sisters. But I'm gonna get to that a little bit. The flashing of cash symbolizes that one has an abundance of wealth and resources. For the materially successful black, the large home in the suburbs symbolizes equality with white people. He is no longer a dumb nigger who has to live
and materially inferior conditions. He is now a man of honor. The economically successful gangbanger never used their ill-gotten millions of dollars to physically redevelop black communities. They will move out of the community and seek to live among white people in the suburbs, and they will never allow chaos to exist in their new home, mostly white environments. Now, one thing, brothers and sisters, is this. And the majority of the cases is true, but there are some brothers and sisters, I can't speak for all brothers and sisters, but there are probably some out there who are trying to redevelop their neighborhoods and get involved to turn that dirty cash into clean cash, to get into legitimate business. However, they set up and run chemical houses that contribute to the existing chaos and desolation in the black community. The big car symbolizes virility and sexual strength. Now, what he's talking about right there, brothers and sisters, is the phallic symbolism. Now, if you ever notice in a lot of the videos, you see a lot of brothers and sisters, or a lot of brothers in particular, holding large cigars. Now, if you understand phallic symbolism, the phallic is a representation of a penis. Now, if you look at the Washington Monument in D.C., that right there, that big white Washington Monument that sits in the middle of Washington, D.C., that right there is a copy of an obelisk. That's the Greek word for a tekenu. That's the long thing, and then that right there is another story within itself about the story of Osiris and his member being cut off by his brother Set, and then but it's a long story. But that's a representation, brothers and sisters, of a penis. And it's the same thing when you watch these music videos of the brothers in the long cars and the women dancing all on top of the car. What they are dancing on is a long penis, a representation of a penis. The car symbolizes virility and sexual strength. In street thinking, he is a man who is able to provide. He is the big dog. The bandana means loyalty. He is part of a family or a soul-tight crew. He is willing to be cast as an identified member of a gang, even if it costs him his life. The scarf cap that covers the head and ties in the black in the back recreates the image of a pirate. A pirate is a bad guy, thief, robber, outlaw, criminal, and scoundrel. It is part of an imaging and symbolizing of the black male as a born criminal. In the old black and white movies, the pirates wore the same kind of headscarf complete with an earring. The black male who innocently emulates this look believes that it is a fashion statement, are unknowingly being imaged as thugs, criminals, and hoods. That's the reason why, brothers and sisters, you got to be careful of what you wear. Now, I'm not telling people not to wear certain things, but you got to be careful because when you wear certain items, people perceive certain things about you. Like if you wear your pants off, you might not be involved in crime. You might go to work every day, provide for your family. You might go to school every day, get all A's and B's. But thing of it is, in this society, they have perceptions about certain people. When a black man wears his pants hanging off his behind and wears an earring in his ear and wears a scarf or a do-rag on his head, certain colors or whatever, people perceive that person to be a thug. Now, later on, in another segment, we're going to get into the origins of the thug. Now, Tupac talked about thug life. Thug life was an acronym for the hate you give little infants fucks everyone. That's what thug life was an acronym for. Now, a lot of people, when they talk about Tupac and thug life, they think he's talking about going out there just, being a criminal. But it wasn't like that. Another thing about t-shirts, too, brothers, before I forget. Today, while I was on the bus stop again, waiting for the State Fair bus, a young lady came up wearing a shirt talking about the original gangster. Who do you think she had on this shirt? It wasn't no fictionalized character such as Tony Montana, Scarface, or Wesley Snipes from New Jack City. I don't agree with wearing none of those shirts. She had Al Capone, an old Italian gangster. Now, when I tell people about the story of Al Capone and everything, the Chicago mobster from the 20s and 30s, and I tell them how he died in prison, their mouths just drop. He died of syphilis.
And I'm going to say it again. Al Capone died of syphilis. Untreated syphilis. And you got black folks running around here wearing t-shirts with a gangster who had no love for black folks, who was a criminal, and who died of syphilis. Okay, gangster rap music lays the groundwork for the expansion of this lifestyle. It validates the black male criminal image in the minds of impressionable young white males. This also means that as these young white males mature and assume their rightful place in the social structure, they will believe that black males are natural, dangerous criminals who must be locked up. They will vote for the candidate who will fight crime. Or in some cases, bro, sisters, some of these same white youth will grow up and go into law enforcement. And then they will always have this perception that the black man or the black woman is the enemy to the state. And then in their minds, after viewing these hundreds of thousands of hours of rap music videos and R&B videos showing this criminal image, or watching the movies, or trying to emulate that lifestyle of trying to be a street thug, a lot of them, once they go back home and go back to reality, or daddy talking about, you know, telling them they're going to cut off their inheritance if they don't come back to the white world or the white reality, a lot of them end up going into law enforcement. In Western society, it is normal for young males to identify with tough criminals or rebellious figures. More than 80 years ago, it was Al Capone, John Milner, and Bonnie and Clyde. In the 1950s, young white males were called rebels without a cause and identified with the tough young white males on motorcycles wearing black caps and black leather outfits. During the hippie generation, white males rebelled against their parents and sported or spouted slogans such as tune in and drop out, and words like generation gap and revolution. However, once they understood and accepted their role, they became the standard bearers for the maintenance of the social order. They became the prosecuting attorneys, judges, and sheriffs who incarcerate bad guys. These symbols serve as social compensation for powerless assistance. The symbols have the power to intoxicate the believers into a franchised alter state. This is why it's so hard to convince young black people to abandon the destructive lifestyle and move into a positive and constructive direction. The power of these symbols is similar to the way young Indian braves and warriors on the American plains felt before going into battle against the United States cavalry. Now, Buster, we got to stop right there, because the comment that I'm going to make is this. When you have youth that have been born in a certain situation and have been indoctrinated to only see negativity, sooner or later, they're going to start embracing it and then justifying the reason why they are engaging in these negative behaviors. Young blacks feel vengeance, infallibility, and invincibility. They feel that they can beat the game and not get caught, and they are ready to die to prove it, even though they know how many individuals have crashed and burned in the process. It doesn't matter, because symbols have created a highly distorted mindset. They live the way they want to, do whatever the large sums of cash will produce, be with any woman they choose, and go anywhere they wish. They feel larger than the people around them because they view others as dumb and weak, and see this as a way to achieve their own objectives. They have no respect for the shirt and tie way of life. This is why they can display so much disrespect, disdain, and disregard. They say to the older black male and female, if money is the thing, and I quote, shit, I've smoked your ass already, end the quote. And Buster, that's the reason why I tell my son, Joseph, who's 12 years old, that it's always good to have a nice pressed pair of slacks, shined up shoes, I mean dress shoes or casual shoes, not gym shoes, but casual dress shoes, and a white shirt, a nice, pressed, clean, white shirt. Because when you in society, well, I'll put it like this. I'm going to give you another example. I went to a job fair about 2 weeks ago, and it was about maybe 600 people there. I'll say half of the people that came there were young black. Well, I'll say majority of the people there, that was, you know, about 80%, were black folks.
And I'll say 50% of the people, brothers and sisters, came looking any type of way. Some came in there with booty shorts. I'm talking about the women. Some came in there with flip-flops and socks. Some came in there with jeans. Some came in there with do-rags on their head or stocking caps. Now, mind you, brothers and sisters, when they said job fair, I thought that the job fair was going to be you go around a table and you talk to prospective employers. But the thing of it is, brothers and sisters, if this would have been a job fair where you had to go in and talk to somebody for an interview, half the people there, the ones that came in, you know, dressed like any type of way, would not have been ready. Plain and simple. And that's straight to the point. So the thing of it is, brothers and sisters, you got to be prepared because your dress will precede, you know, the perception of how you dress will be the reaction that you will get from certain people. Now, don't get me wrong, you do have certain people who will look at you in a certain fashion because that they feel that they are better than you because they are wearing a suit and tie. But the thing of it is, if you come in halfway dressed decently, wearing the slacks, the dress shoes, and the white shirt with the necktie, or just, you know, clean shirt or whatever, then people are going to perceive you to be a certain way. Let's see. These material symbols have become part of the big setup. What is the big setup? The big setup is the use of material and symbolic inducements to entrap, incarcerate, and eliminate millions of young black males. These intoxicating symbols are used to image and glorify a destructive lifestyle as wonderful. The big setup is designed to trap black males at an early age through the symbols of manhood, power, big money, eternal life, royalty, unequaled adventure, unlimited excitement, unbridled sex and intrigue. The young black males live under the direct glare of white supremacy indoctrination. They have no real image alternative, counterthinking, or cultural shield to protect them from the most addictive racial propaganda system in the known world. Black people in North America do not identify with or speak a separate language, nor do they have strong cultural remembrances that enable them to withstand this barrage of propaganda. The racial propaganda of white ideals, white values, and white glamour and standards of social progress have decimated the ideal of blackness as a cultural, social, political, intellectual, historical bonding process. The first objective of a racial propaganda system is to establish a program of indoctrination to get young blacks to see blackness as an acceptable, derogatory lifestyle. This is achieved through the glamorization of a corrupt lifestyle by television, movies, videos, the internet, and computer war games. It is achieved by the disconnection and destruction of real black history, supplanting it with the glorification of nonsense. The only history that is permitted at a mass level is the slave or social protest history. This history is so embarrassing and limited that most black males would rather not know the story. And brothers and sisters, that's the reason why it's so important to study all aspects of our history, regardless if it's, you know, the dynasties over in Africa, to the Middle Passage, to the Civil Rights era, to what's going on now. The problem is, brothers and sisters, and it's sad to say, too many of us are not reading. Too many of us are not talking to the elders to get their side of the story of things that was going on. I mean, there's nothing wrong with reading and investigating and doing an analysis, but the thing of it is, sometimes you have to sit back and talk to the elders and get the other side of the story. Because, you know, too many times, if you don't know your history, you're doomed to fall for anything. And that's sad, brothers and sisters, because we have, not just brothers and sisters in the streets, but we have college-educated black folks who don't want us to remember our history, who don't want to remember the history themselves. They, you know, it's sad to say, but we have a lot of our people who don't want to embrace the culture. They rather simulate in the, you know, in the culture of white supremacy than fight or, you know, build a base. As Marcus Garvey once said, a race first. Mm-hmm. The second objective is to establish and reinforce symbols and value systems that encourage the devaluation of black life. The greatest symbol here is the dollar bill. The dollar bill is flashed before the eyes, a symbol of great riches, fabulous lifestyles, and wonderful existence. They have been conditioned to believe that having many dollar bills is far more valuable than human life. Getting money becomes the reason for living. Without money, an individual has no value and is worthless. They have been taught that it is perfectly acceptable and expected to get money through illegal and violent means. They have been trained to believe that it is all right to use terror, to terrorize and even kill powerless black people to get their money. This is made easy by the use of hypnotic music and derogatory language that devalues and debases black people. This devaluation is reflected in the use of words such as nigger, bitch, and hoe bitch as standard dialogue in the presence of older black females and white people. This is a grand departure from the recent past, when black males would not use curse words in the presence of older black women, and they never used the word nigger in front of white people. The recording companies have encouraged and financed this kind of racial debasement. They rationalize and say, and I quote, "Hell, if they call themselves niggers, they cannot accuse us of racism. These niggers are dumber than we thought," end of quote. White supremacists do not develop and promote music or other products that knowingly glorify the devaluation and debasement of their own race. They know better. Yet, the white supremacists will encourage, underwrite, sponsor, and exploit the debasement and devaluation of black people. They will pay black males and females millions of dollars to degrade themselves and their race. And brothers and sisters, let me tell you, what's going on today, it'll be shocking. If Dr. King, Malcolm X, or the average right-thinking black person was to see what some of our youth are engaging in, it would be sickening, brothers and sisters. When I talked about earlier that we have young black males and females engaged in the pornographic industry, that right there should be enough said. We have young black males and females that are engaged in some of the most degrading behavior ever caught on film, engaged not just with other black males and females, but with other people of the same sex, with animals, with white males who are wearing KKK hoods and sheets, got the tattoos all on their body, degrading black women. I mean, it's so shocking, brothers and sisters, it would turn your stomach. And some of these same performers will justify saying that they have to get paid. But as I stated before, the holes in our souls are so deep that we value material things more than we value ourselves. Brothers and sisters, let me get off that topic right there, because it's just mind-blowing. And I think that when you got people that's like this that justify their degradation, I mean, you know, degrading themselves on film like that, it's the justification of the other man to come in and say, well, these folks ain't worth a damn. We might as well just go ahead and just do them in. Just go ahead and commit wholesale genocide on these folks. And then also, brothers and sisters, well, let me get back to this. White supremacist training teaches black people that other black people are the enemy. They are trained to believe that other black people in another part of town have control of things and territories that they want. The subliminal billboards, commercials, music videos, and magazine covers repeat this central theme. The black male is the enemy. He has Uzis, Glock 9s, and other weapons of destruction. The black male above all must be killed because he is the enemy. Young blacks involved in gangbanging have been programmed like zombies to kill and debase each other. And a word here, brothers and sisters, is this. It has been escalated to the point, brothers and sisters, where brothers and sisters are killing one another thanks to the drug trade. Now, the drug trade has always been a very violent, it has always been very violent. But with the introduction of crack cocaine back in the early 80s, mid 80s, it is the murder rates or the killing amongst blacks killing blacks has basically skyrocketed through the roof. I mean, it's shocking, brothers and sisters, you know, some of the things other brothers and sisters would do to one another to control certain areas of cities, urban cities across America, in order to sell that dangerous or that poisonous product called crack cocaine. Young blacks involved in gangbanging have been programmed like zombies to kill and debase each other. They believe without question that black people or niggas are dispensable, low-life snakes that deserve to be killed because they are menaces to society. Do society a favor and kill a nigga. After all, nothing will happen when you kill a nigga. They understand that black life has no value under white supremacy. They have watched with great indifference the destruction of millions of black people. And brothers, I gotta agree, because as I stated before, a lot of these white supremacist organizations such as the Ku Klux Klan, the White Aryan Resistance, and hundreds of other groups out there, they basically sitting back and saying that let the niggas kill one another. Because, you know, give them guns, they gonna kill one another. Give them a few pieces of drugs, they gonna kill one another. It's like if you throw some meat into a cage, brothers and sisters, with two lions, and they haven't been fed in a long time, one of those lions gonna kill the other lion just to get that meat. And it's the same thing that's going on with the drug trade. And it's another thing is too, brothers and sisters, we think about public housing or the projects. That was all set up by design, brothers and sisters, to keep black folks in a state of confusion. Public housing was designed, brothers and sisters, to keep black folks in a state of confusion. And it's sort of like just give them just enough to survive, and they're gonna fight over the little meager resources that we provide for them. The genocide of millions of black people in Rwanda, the Congo, and other locations on the African continent was hardly mentioned above a whisper, even in the black media. And we talk about black media, talking about black formatted radio, cable television, and newspapers. And now, another thing is, too, brothers, a lot of black folks are still under the impression that BET is still owned by Robert Johnson, a black man. But thing of it is, BET is now owned by Viacom. And Viacom, brothers and sisters, also owns MTV, which has that crazy-ass show with Flavor Flav from Public Enemy called The Flavor of Love. And that right there could be another topic within itself. And I might get into that just in a little bit. Let's see. The genocide of millions of black people in Rwanda, the Congo, and other locations on the African continent was hardly meant. Okay. Therefore, who cares if a nigga dies? They heard reports during the 13th annual AIDS conference in Durban, South Africa, that up to 60 million black people would die in less than 5 years from the AIDS virus, and no major black person seemed to care. They surmised from this information that black life is highly expendable. These young, untrained, uncultured black minds never think about challenging the reality dominant force in their lives, white supremacy. They have been programmed to respect the symbols of white supremacy. They have been taught to admire, fear, and respect white people. They may not admit this, and as a matter of record, they will say that they hate white people. However, the facts and their behavior show the opposite is true. They have been conditioned to hate black people. That is why they kill black people. They believe that white people are the ultimate and most feared people and power on earth. They do not disrupt white businesses or white society. They know better. They clearly understand the social and personal consequences of this kind of action. And brothers and sisters, it's not just street level thugs. We got people. We got black folks, black faces in high places, who are basically doing the same things, but just at a higher level. We can look at Condoleezza Rice, Clarence Thomas, Sir Colin Powell, Ward Connerly, and hundreds of other black folks in politics, sports, entertainment, on a local, national, and international levels, who are basically carrying out the mandates of white supremacy because they have been indoctrinated in all levels to carry out the white supremacy agenda. right now, brothers and sisters, I'm going to go to another article about the origin of the thug. And this is going to come as a shock to a lot of people out there, because we have a lot of brothers and sisters out there running around talking about that they thugs or thug life. And as I explained earlier, Tupac, when he talked about thug life, it was an acronym for the hate you give little infants fucks everyone. Right now, brothers and sisters, the book that I'm going to is entitled Inside Secret Societies by Michael Benson. What They Don't Want You to Know. Inside Secret Societies, and we go to page 218. This is sort of like a dictionary of all different secret societies around the world. But I don't really consider them to be secret no more, because they basically don't care. These societies don't care, because they're basically letting the world know that this is our agenda. What the hell y'all gonna do about it? Nothing, because y'all under our spell and control. Thuggies. Now, you hear a lot of bros talking about they thugs and thug life, and I explained what Tupac meant about thug life. Thuggies. One of the world's oldest organized crime gangs, dating back to the early 19th century. The Indian secret society worships the goddess Kali. Members were known as thugs. Thugs tend to be the sons of thugs, which is the source of the English word thug, meaning hoodlum. And membership is considered hereditary. Thugs could be either Hindu or Muslim. Thugs preyed on travelers, robbing and often murdering their victims. As is the case with many organized crime groups, the men carried out the thug activities while the women at home knew nothing about it. According to the British broadcasting company, BBC, and I quote, a typical thug killing was done by joining a group of travelers and entertaining and cooking for them so that the travelers were soon off guard. At a prearranged signal, the code phrase was, bring the tobacco. The thugs would strangle the male travelers and take everything of value. Thugs kept the valuables themselves and dedicated the corpses to Cali. Members of a thug group had their own specialties. There were the Sothays, who lured travelers, the Lughays, who dug the graves in advance, and the Bahututus. The Bahatotus, who killed. The victims were strangled with a scarf collar, Rumal. At their peak, thugs were murdering 40,000 people per year. During the 1830s, the British rulers of India went to war with the thuggies. The leader of this movement was William Sleeman, who established the Thuggee and Dacoity Department inside the Indian government. And basically, brothers and sisters, what was going on during the time, the British had did an imperial move and basically took over the whole society of India. According to the BBC, and I quote, over 3,000 thugs were captured by William Sleeman during the 1830s. 483 thugs gave evidence against the rest. 412 were hanged and the rest imprisoned or rehabilitated, end of quote. Some, however, have described this anti-thug movement as a witch hunt, with many non-thugs and innocents being killed along with the guilty parties. Kind of sound like the so-called war on drugs, brothers and sisters, of how so many brothers and sisters, innocent brothers and sisters, might not have anything to do with selling drugs or participating in the drug lifestyle, getting caught up or getting killed, due to these raids and everything. The thuggy and the Coity Department was the primary anti-thuggy force until the beginning of the 20th century, when a new Central Criminal Intelligence Department replaced it. The anti-thuggy movement was very successful, a fact that greatly benefited the British rulers. Thugs became famous in the Western world because of the popularity of a book called Confessions of a Thug, written by Philip Metal Taylor in 1839. More recently, the thuggies were featured in George Bruce's 1968 book, The Stranglers, The Cult of the Thuggie, and Its Overthrow in British India. In the 1939 film Gunga Din, and in the 1984 in Indiana Jones in the Temple of Doom. Jules Verne described the thugs in his 1872 book, Around the World in 80 Days. Verne wrote, and I quote, the travelers crossed beyond Milagwam, the fatal country so often stained with blood by the sectaries of the goddess Kali. It was thereabouts that Ferengi, the thuggy chief, king of the stranglers, held his sway. These ruffians, united by a secret bond, strangled victims of every age in honor of the goddess of death, without ever shedding blood. There was a period when this part of the country could scarcely be traveled over without corpses being found in every direction. The English government had succeeded in greatly diminishing these murders. Do the thuggies still exist and pursue the exercise of the horrible rites? End of quote. And that was a quote from Jules Burns. By 1890, the thugs were all but extinct, although the thuggy concept continues in India, sometimes under that name. Now, brothers and sisters, the thing of it is, when, you know, white folks ain't got no business calling nobody thugs, look at the moves that they have pulled on every other culture of color or every other group of people of color around the planet. We can look at what the British did to the Chinese. We can look at what they did over in India. We can look at what they did to the indigenous people of this land. I don't want to call them American Indians because they never called themselves American Indians. But we can also look at what they have done over in Africa. We can look at what they are doing today over there in Iraq, Afghanistan, Lebanon, and other parts of the so-called Middle East. We can look at what these modern-day thugs, I ain't talking about the black ones, I'm talking about the white ones who wear three-piece suits or business suits and who are CEOs of Fortune 500 companies or corporations and who wear uniforms for the military and the police departments around this country. They are nothing but gangs also. But what I want to say, brothers and sisters, not to jump off the topic anymore, is this. What I just read to you, brothers and sisters, was basically dealing with the white supremacy mindset that has been transferred into the minds of millions upon millions of black folks across this country. When we really think about it, brothers and sisters, we must protect our minds at all times. And what do I mean? We need to be careful of what we listen to, what we watch, and what we say to one another, because words and images are very powerful. Symbols are very powerful. A lot of times we in this society, we take a lot of these things for granted. And the worst thing in the world is, brothers and sisters, is we have people in this society who believe that their minds cannot be tampered with. But the question I always ask is, well, why do you wear certain clothes that you wear? Why do you listen to certain music that you listen to? Why do you say the certain things that you say? It is all because, brothers and sisters, we have been, how can I put it? We have all been enticed in one way or another to dress a certain way, to listen to certain types of music, to think a certain way. We have all been indoctrinated in a certain way. And the thing of it is, brothers and sisters, as I stated before, that's the reason why we need to protect our minds at all times and do analysis, do research, conversate and talk to one another, listen to one another, to our different concerns. And the most important thing is, brothers and sisters, is this. We as a people, we got to stop being scared of our youth. Start listening to the youth. Start leading by example. Because as I stated before, actions speak louder than words. And the thing of it is, brothers and sisters, the actions that we present today are going to be a ramification of what's to come in the future. And the thing of it is, brothers and sisters, as I stated before, we have a lot of work to do, and I'm going to stay upbeat, and I'm going to stay positive, and I'm not just going to leave it into the hands of God, because as the Bible says, faith without works is dead. And you have been listening to a segment of DLH Audio and Video Productions with Brother Dex, and I'm out of here. Peace.